Good evening.
Good evening.
Recently, we started a study of the Eightfold Path, the Buddhist Eightfold Path, the Fourth Noble Truth, and every month we will be exploring one of them. Right speech, right understanding, right intention, right livelihood, right action, and so forth. And it seems to me that there's one missing, or there's an element of our practice that we should look at, and that's not, I don't think it's in any of the sutras or scriptures, and I think it is actually the foundation of our practice, and simply that is patience. Patience is not known as one of the Eightfold Path, but it is so vital to our practice. Patience, when you consider patience and look at it, and look at your own experience with it, you realize that what it means is to be truly present in any situation. Whether you are happy with the situation or not so happy with the situation, but to be truly present within it. And when that happens, when we are patient in that way, really present in whatever is in front of us, it means we are a totally complete participant in the unfolding of our life. And that's what we want, to be a totally immersed and participating in our life. And true, I said, a true participant. By true, we mean no separation. True participant in life means you're not separated from your life in any way. And that, of course, means that we are completely honest in our seeing, in our hearing, in our speaking, and in our acting. So simple notion of patience really covers a great deal about us and our life. So in practical terms, patience means to accept someone or something just as it is or just as she is, without demanding that they meet our preferences. Without silently demanding or being disappointed that, oh, they didn't quite come up to what we would like. This person in front of me or this situation, gee, I wish it were better. Patience means we just accept it, whatever it is, without judging it. Once we start to judge it or express some disappointment in it, we will start to lose patience with it. So any situation or any person that we meet, that comes to us, we accept it, or we accept him or her as if they are us, ourself. Consider how any of us relate to a newborn baby, an infant, or a kitten. Think of how you are when you come across an infant or a kitten. Immediately you smile. Immediately. And you have this instinct or this impulse to hug or embrace or play with and, you know, kichiku. You have this instinct just to accept without judging, without wishing it were some other color or some other sex or something. It's just, oh. the impulse to embrace it, and we spontaneously break out and smile. It's just, you know, statues of Buddha. Always has a smile. Always a smile. Meaning, whoever comes, it's fine. Well, it doesn't mean that we treat each other like puppies, you know. Just, we have a smiling mind when we meet each other or meet a situation. A mind that smiles. That doesn't become impatient because, oh, gee whiz, it isn't quite what I want. A smiling mind where there is no judgment, no desire, and no anxiety in the relationship. When we can have a smiling mind like that and just continuous patience, that's how our mind stays quiet and unperturbed. We let our mind be quiet in the moment that we apprehend something or we hear some word or there's some action. And when we are quiet like that, when we are patient like that, we can actually feel ourselves responding. Nothing gets in the way of feeling how we are in this situation. We can feel ourselves responding, which is the meaning of feeling alive. When we don't have patience, or when we lose it, it means we can't wait to react to some word or to some activity. Just can't wait to push back. And when we say, can't wait to push back, it means we are want to react according to our own preferences. So you're having a conversation with someone and they say something and you want to say, yes, but. So you stop listening carefully and you're so impatient that they finish so that you can talk. And we don't hear them. So we react. Without patience, we have a tendency to react according to our preferences by judging the situation agreeable or disagreeable. And without that kind of patience in the moment, we can't respond to an individual or to a person just as it is. We want it to be something else. When we cannot respond to an individual or a situation just as it is, means we lose respect and we have no reverence for it. It becomes something that we want to control. And you know, once we lose respect and once we lose reverence, we start to create separation. And in the extreme case, separation becomes war. So patience is how we keep the peace. It begins with accepting the truth of Buddhism and the truth of the world, the truth of the teachings, which is that the world is temporary and transient. Patience begins with accepting that truth and understanding that all things change. When we understand that, and it helps us develop patience, we will not be upset when we lose something or someone because things changed, or something is no longer what it was. Patience allows us to accept the change. So instead of being upset when things change, with patience we will be able to practice equanimity and humility and generosity in the face of whatever it is. And at that time we won't worry about what we want or what we think we need. Patience means we go beyond the anxious feeling of wanting something immediately. When we don't have that anxiety of wanting something right now, I want to get my opinion heard right now. I want to say how I feel right now. When we don't worry about that, then time or the passing of time is not a problem, and we don't feel impatient. Impatience means that we have what we could call a can't wait attitude, which comes from the anxiety of feeling that we are losing time. We're wasting time. I'm impatient. Get on with it. Hurry up what you're saying so that I can say what I have to say. We're wasting time. As if time were some kind of personal thing. When we find ourselves being impatient with somebody who's doing something that we think is too slow, or speaking something that we think is taking too long, we secretly feel, oh, he's wasting my time. But how can time belong to me, or to you, or to anyone? Time cannot belong to one person. Time is just some idea that we people created for convenience, to help us relate to each other, to have relationships, and to take care of things. Cannot possess time. So it doesn't make any sense. Really doesn't make any sense to be patient. Time is not ours to hold on to or to save. So to understand ourselves, and to understand our life, we need to understand patience. But this understanding is not about having great wisdom. Usually we feel that when we understand something, then we will be able to explain it. We will be able to write about it, or speak about it, or teach it, whatever that something is. When we understand something, I can tell you all about it. But in our practice, we cannot explain what we mean by understanding. Understanding in the sense of our practice is not the same as the understanding we have in our everyday life. This understanding does not come from the thinking mind that can explain. So there's no need for us to strive for what we might call complete understanding or complete wisdom, just to have a small glimpse or a little bit of an inkling, that's enough. And this glimpse is really an urging to go in some direction. Push, go this way. It's like when you go for a hike or go for a walk and you hear a sound, you want to turn your head to know what it is. So when you have a small glimpse of understanding, that's enough. You will say, I want to know what it is. I have to turn towards it. And so when we ask, what is it? I have to turn towards it. This is the start of our practice. And to know what it is, we come to practice. Our effort to know what it is brings us to practice. And this becomes the foundation of our understanding. We often say that, we often tell visitors and or new people, when you sit this way in Zazen, in meditation, don't have a goal, don't have a purpose. Don't try to measure it or achieve some objective. There's no goal. And don't worry about time, how much time it's taking. So when you cook something, when you're cooking rice, without using the automatic rice cooker, if you cook rice, or you make tea, you have to stay aware of the process to know how it's going. Just stay aware of the process. And you don't push the process to reach the end point quickly. It's finished when it's finished. You just stay aware of the process and watch it. And we don't say, oh, can I have some now? Can I have some now? No, just stay aware of the process. Don't push it. If we say, oh, please, can I have some now? This is impatience. And, this is what children do. If we have this kind of attitude in our practice, it will lead to our disappointment. In our practice, we don't worry about reaching some future result or some future end point. We just stay patient with the process. Don't worry about the end point. And we come to understand in our practice, because we learn to sit without expectations and with patience, we see that the beginning point of our practice and the end point of our practice occur simultaneously every moment. In other words, we are already cooked and we are being cooked at the same time. This gives us great confidence in ourself. You know the well-known saying of Suzuki Roshi, you are already perfect, but you can use some improvement. We are already cooked, and we are still being cooked at the same time. Outside of our practice, this notion seems foolish, but in our practice, we understand its meaning. So when we practice without a goal, it means we are not attached to preferences. Like when we sit quietly, we sit here in the morning quietly, not a sound in the neighborhood, and suddenly there's a motorcycle on Rock Street. We don't think, I'd rather I heard raindrops, or I'd rather that were a bird. or I'd rather be doing something else. We just sit with our breath, and we don't make demands, and simply accept all things as they occur, things that continually come and go. The world of coming and going is the world of time, of goals, and of getting things done. It's the world of knowing what's happening, and it's the world of explanations. When we are completely present in this world of explanations, then we are expressing the world of no explanations. But if we are even slightly separate from the world of explanations, we get impatient with the world of no explanations. The world of no explanations is the timeless world where there are no distinctions and where impatience cannot appear. So, the most important element of our practice is, of course, to appreciate ourself in the deepest sense, to appreciate our what we call our true nature or Buddha nature. To appreciate our true nature means we do understand that we have Buddha nature, just like Buddha proclaimed 2,500 years ago, 2,300 years ago. To understand that we have Buddha nature, this understanding is the start of real practice. And it's easy to understand intellectually. Intellectually to say, yes, I understand, I have Buddha nature. But it is not so easy to accept it through and through without any limitation. And this is why we practice. Our daily life is made up of things of the everyday world. Sometimes we call it the dualistic world. Black and white, pro and con, up and down. World of judgments. The world that includes what we like and what we don't like. And it's not easy to put aside this world that brings us great benefit but can also create problems for us. It's not easy to put it aside and let it go, because it is very compelling, this everyday world, and it's very attractive. It offers us many opportunities for satisfaction. So, who wants to let it go? But our true nature is found only in the world beyond likes and dislikes. The world of absolute reality. And our practice, our Zazen practice, is the way we express our Buddha nature in the world of likes and dislikes. So our practice is very easy. You don't have to go through a long training program to learn the fundamentals of our practice. You learn it on the first day you come here, and in 20 minutes you have everything you need to know about how to do this practice. It's very simple, but it's not easy. Because we get distracted by our likes and our dislikes that are present, that are constantly present in the world of duality. How we can do it, how we can do this simple but difficult practice is to live our life each moment like a candle. Just burn brightly in each activity, like a candle, without flicker. Everything we do, wherever we are, wherever we go, our practice is about just giving light without pride, without saying, oh, look at me, I'm giving light. So Suzuki Roshi, there's a book of his saying called, shine your light in one corner, wherever you are. Just shine your light like a candle. Just burn brightly without flicker, without the pride of saying, I'm giving light, and also without saying, oh, I can't give light. We have to sit up and give our light. Either way of thinking, pride in giving light and disappointment for not giving light, that's not our practice. That is a not mature way to live. When we have either of those attitudes, we will not be able to express or understand our true nature. So we should practice being a candle. And be careful not to admire our own light, which we tend to do. Instead, we should give our full attention to every other candle that we meet. There's a brightness here, and the smile comes to your face. Now, usually we like bright candles, and we don't like dim candles. But mostly we like our own candle best of all. But that admiration for our own candle is just some kind of fear of our small mind. If we were to meet a dim candle, our job is to encourage brightness with patience and with generosity. And when we meet a very, very bright candle, be careful not to be hypnotized. So when we practice, we learn how to treat each candle without preference, but with patience. And this is how we express our true self. Are there any questions tonight? Lee.
They have potential of having that brightness in them, but some people just really seem to drain all the light out of the situation. They drain energy away, and it can be very difficult to deal with somebody who's very negative and very outspoken about it. What can we do to help? Situation like that.
We can say to ourself, I'm not going to let this energy drain away.
Well, that's first.
And just keep working on that and respond as positively as we can to a situation where there's it's negative and it's difficult. We just try to be as positive, stay as positive as we can, so that when that meeting is over, we can honestly say, I really gave it my best. And we don't go away saying, oh, gee, I could have given it a little bit more. Thank you. Yes, please.
I'm Mike.
Mike?
Yes.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Can you please clarify this notion of having no goal? It seems intuitive that if you have no goal, you can't accept the process. For example, even if I want sort of a drink of water, it seems like I have a goal of getting the drink of water. So the process of getting the drink of water can exist intuitively without the goal of getting the drink of water. So I think this is sort of a misunderstanding, and I'd like you to clarify the concept of having no goal and what exactly that means.
You're right. In the activities of our everyday life, we have to set some goals, or it's hard to be focused and direct our energy efficiently and creatively. If we want to build a house or a freeway, we have to have a picture of what it's supposed to look like, and that's our goal. But when it comes to our spiritual life, there is no goal because we're already there. This is the understanding about our true nature. We don't have to obtain it. It's here. We just have to express it. So, you're right, we have to make a distinction between everyday, practical, pragmatic goals and goals as they relate to our practice. Thank you. Dave.
Wes, the subject of patience for me personally is particularly timely. Normally when I think about facing other people with patience, my mind automatically goes to other adults.
Other adults.
Difficult or not so difficult, or wide spectrum of adults. But I just started a new activity with this fall semester of right down the street at Crittenden Middle School teaching or coaching a robotics team. And this is the first time I've been in a classroom full of 12-year-olds since I was 12 years old. And it's a real practice opportunity for me to maintain patience with a room full of squirrely 12-year-olds, especially the boys. So I'm working on it, trying very hard to see this 12-year-old light in each of these 12-year-old kids.
Hmm.
And one of the things that helps is that I realize that the only way that I can teach them patience is to be patient with them. And maybe a little bit of it will rub off. But like I say, it's going to be an interesting challenge, a real practice opportunity.
Good. Better than going to a monastery.
Different than going to a monastery.
Thank you. Let us know how it goes. Yes, please.
Yeah, I hear there is two type of war. Like one is ultimate war, and the other one is the reality, this world, I mean, which we have to make decisions, make choices. move towards the goal. So if I want to dry, I have to go to left, right, I have to decide. So this is the reality world, and we have another world, spiritual world, which is more peaceful, everything positive. So do we have to flip-flop between two worlds, or we can stay remain in the spiritual world and look at the world?
No flip-flopping. No flip-flopping. As your practice deepens, you begin to understand that there are no two worlds that you have to flip-flop. Little bit by little bit, you see that you express the large, the patient part of yourself in the everyday world. That you practice wherever you are, in whatever crazy situation you might be in. You take this practice wherever you go. It's not like, for an hour I'll do meditation here, and then I'll go into the other world of commuting and working. The practice we do here, we carry with us. So we take this world into that world. We continue. We don't take, we continue the world or the mind that we have here into the world that's there. So that they're same. And, if we are in the busy everyday world, and it gets anxious, stressful, then we feel, boy, this is so much different than sitting quietly. It feels like another world. When we feel that way, we just stop for a moment, take a breath, and revisit for a minute or two the quiet world that we have here. So they're together. We can bring them together. Okay? Umar.
Let's, now this reading of looking something up, and I came across this quote, the Buddha was asked that, what did you get out of meditation? And he said, nothing at all. He said, what I did lose was insecurity, the fear of death, the fear of old age, anxiety, depression, but I got nothing out of it. So, and you were talking about anxiety and the anxiousness to say what comes to the first thing or the clever thing to say or something like that. So under depression and insecurity and anxiousness, it's called desire that sits underneath it? Is it what sits underneath that, all of that, is desire to hold on to something, to grasp on to something? Well, you were saying time is a concept too, that it's an idea, so it's this desire to somehow hold on to time. Is that an illusion that we...
Trying to hold on to time is an illusion. And in the same way that Buddhist teachings say trying to hold on to your life is a delusion. It's just going. It's like the wind. How can you hold it? We sometimes tend to make this practice seem so ideal. Just do this and everything. not so simple. Sometimes we have some problems, some emotional problems that are very stubborn, and just sitting quietly for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, it doesn't dissipate that. So we have to learn how to live our life as wholesomely as we can in whatever situation we're in. And sometimes it's very difficult. And that's why in Buddhism we have this notion of Sangha, community, where we can support each other and feel supported by each other and not feel that we are isolated or alone in whatever difficulties we're having. Three treasures in Buddhism: Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Sangha being the community of everybody. Buddha said, oh, that's the most important. Yes, please.
It struck me that you used the phrase to express your Buddha nature. I previously heard to awaken to your Buddha nature or to realize your Buddha nature. And when I bring the three words together, there is a subtle difference between them. I wonder if you could say something about that, if you use the word express deliberately, and maybe what the subtle variation on that is.
It's important for our own well-being and for the well-being of people we are with. It's important to express our true nature immediately, moment by moment. If we say, well, I'll do that after I awaken to it, that's a misunderstanding. If we say, when I realize my Buddha nature, then I will be able to express it. To express means we don't wait for some awakening. And that can be a misunderstanding in the literature of this practice. People striving for some kind of enlightenment so then they can do something good. But in our way, we say, express who you are right now, even if it's not perfect. Do your best to express who you are right now and don't wait for some big breakthrough. So, yeah, there's an important difference. Thank you. Yes, please.
How do we work to distinguish between the things of which we should become more patient and the situations or things in a situation which we can remove, of which we are particularly impatient? Imagine a rock band across the street that happened to practice at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. You could ask to stop, as opposed to just saying, you know, the guy that drives by on his bicycle and thinks the bicycle, and we can just learn to deal with. How do we distinguish between when we should learn to deal versus change?
We should try to stay patient in every situation, but in some situations we don't take action. But sometimes we take action when we feel there is harm being done. Well, there's a disturbance that goes beyond our own personal upset. If there's a rock band over there and we feel annoyed by it, we try to stay patient with it, but we try to point out to them, lots of people are trying to sleep. It's not just me. It's a bigger problem. So we take action when there's a problem beyond our own desires. I think maybe that's one way to determine how we should respond in each situation.